For 1 week and 1 week only, men are invited onto Radio Gorgeous. Welcome to Man Week. Today, I'm very excited to have on Radio Gorgeous Man Week, an Oxford Don whose teachings are mostly Victorian and modern literature. He's written two recent books about Victorians. The first was Becoming Dickens, which looked at Dickens' early life. But today, in celebration of 150th anniversary of Alice in Wonderland being published, we're talking about his latest book, which is The Story of Alice, Lewis Carroll and the Secret History of Wonderland. He is Robert Douglas Fairhurst. Welcome to Radio Gorgeous.
Thank you, and hello, gorgeous listeners.
You said exactly the right thing. Robert, can you tell me why Alice in Wonderland is still a cultural phenomenon and her relevance to our lives today, please?
She's like one of those funfair mirrors you used to see at a carnival that produce these strange distorted reflections of anything you put in front of them. And that's what she's become as a character. And that's also what the books have become over the last 150 years. So they've become ways in which we can think about and reflect on all sorts of other things.
So can you tell me about where we'll see Alice in reflection in our lives today?
Well, anyone who's got a mobile phone knows that we all carry around a little rabbit hole in our pockets or our bags, don't we? You open up your mobile phone and you can disappear into a strange wonderland where people put on disguises, where the world seems to be kind of infinite. It stretches in every direction, a place where you can play. So that's one example. But you don't have to go to your mobile phones. You can go to London's West End in November and the National Theatre. There's a brand new musical by Damon Albarn, which is about the online world, and it's based on Alice in Wonderland. If you go to Tokyo, you can visit a restaurant where all the waitresses are dressed up in Alice costumes, and you can order a mock turtle salad or caterpillar sushi roll. You can go to New York Central Park, and there's a huge bronze statue. Again, in London, there's a new office building, which is themed around Alice.
Tell me about this Alice in Wonderland building in London. It sounds brilliant.
So there's a brand new office block in London which is themed around Alice in Wonderland. It includes a Queen of Hearts boardroom, which sounds slightly terrifying. There's a huge white fiberglass rabbit in the corridor. And every room, every aspect of the building is themed around Alice. And I suppose what that shows is that, well, as one of Carroll's obituaries said at the start of the 20th century, we are all Alice more or less. We are all Alice more. You don't even have to have read the books to know the stories.
Yes, I must admit I have never read them. Isn't that a terrible thing to admit? But I've read your book because I find actually people's lives more fascinating sometimes than books. Is that a terrible thing to say?
No, it's not at all. And the reason that I called the book The Story of Alice is it's really about two stories. It's about how the books got written, who Lewis Carroll was, why he was fascinated with writing children's stories. But it's also about the life of the real Alice, Alice Liddell, and what happens to someone if their own life starts falling into the patterns of a story. You know, what happens if all the things that are most exciting to you happen before you're 8 years old? And then you have to spend the next 70 years living in the shadow of this fictional creature who goes off on her own adventures. And meanwhile, if you're Alice Liddell, you end up having to live in this this mansion, kind of rattling around as your sons go off to war. Two of the three sons are killed in the trenches of the First World War. And she ends up as this rather strange figure who has one foot in the world of fiction and one foot in the real world. And that's what I was so interested in.
So she becomes a celebrity again, which is relevant to today.
She does indeed. She becomes a reluctant celebrity. It's really only after 1928, when she's in her late 70s, and she sells the manuscript which Carroll wrote for her back in the 1860s, the original Alice in Wonderland. She sells it because she needs the money, because her husband has died, death duties are very high, and she needs the cash. But then suddenly, she's revealed as the inspiration for this iconic children's book. And suddenly the reporters start camping on her doorstep. She's invited to America. She accepts an honorary degree from Columbia University. And nobody at the time thinks it's at all strange that you are giving an honorary degree to a fictional character. It's as if people couldn't tell the difference anymore between the real person and the storybook heroine.
Also, she's a fictional character, but real. So it is very muddling, isn't it?
It is, although there are parallels. So in 1932, she meets somebody called Peter Llewellyn Davis. And Peter was one of the boys who inspired the original Peter Pan. One of the boys adopted by J.M. Barrie. And so there you've got two grown-ups who are faced with these fictional characters who can never grow up. There's a recent play, actually, by John Logan, the screenwriter, who's also behind the recent Bond film Spectre. His play Peter and Alice imagines the conversation they might have had in the back room of this bookshop in 1932. And Peter thinks that it's dreadful, you can never escape your childhood. And Alice, she kind of likes the idea. She likes the idea that people, when they look at her, see a little gleam of their own childhood looking back from her face.
Man Week on Radio Gorgeous. Now, another thing I read that apparently all children's books nowadays stem from Alice in Wonderland. Why is that?
Well, the kinds of books that people were reading to their children, or children were reading themselves before Alice in Wonderland, were books like The History of the Fairchild Family. It's by Mary Sherwood. It goes into lots and lots of different editions. And includes cheering scenes like the father taking a son and a daughter who've quarrelled to a gibbet to see a criminal rotting in his chains as a warning to them not to misbehave.
Oh, yeah, Straw Peter, I remember my children having when they were young, and about the girl with the matches that set herself on fire.
Exactly, and there are lots of those stories. And interestingly, right at the start of Alice in Wonderland, Alice thinks back over those stories, which, of course, would have told her not to drink a potion marked Drink Me and not to eat a little cake marked Eat Me, because, of course, in those stories, they'd poison her and she'd die. But she goes ahead and does it anyway. But because it's all happening inside her head, because the whole thing is a dream, there aren't any serious consequences.
And do you think that's, again, people can relate to that because it's like nowadays we feel safer? How does that relate to now? Is that like drug taking or something?
Well, it's interesting, isn't it, that, I mean, now we tend to think that Carol must have been on drugs because Alice nibbles a bit from a mushroom. And, of course, the Alice books were picked up by drug culture in the 1960s. So the song White Rabbit by Jefferson Airplane is based on the Alice books, but, of course, it's really about LSD. The lyrics of Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds begin with "Picture yourself in a boat on a river," which, of course, is how the Alice books begin. So it's tempting to think that Carroll must have been on drugs when he wrote the books. But actually, rather boringly, there's no evidence he was. What he was doing was playing around with the child's imagination as this power that can transform the everyday world simply by kind of remaking it.
Now, we must ask, how did Carroll know about children if he didn't have any of his own?
Well, Oxford's, even though dons couldn't marry when Carroll started working at Christchurch in Oxford, there were lots of children around. And, of course, he had lots of sisters. He had seven sisters, but he was the eldest son. And so when he was growing up, he was the storyteller and the entertainer-in-chief. And in fact, we can still see some of his childhood games in museums. And we know that he enjoyed marionette theatres. We know he enjoyed putting together magazines full of stories and skits and jokes and pictures. So in some ways, he was rehearsing for the Alice books when he himself was a child. And in fact, you see little bits of those early writings in the Alice books. The Mouse's Tail, for instance, starts off as the tail of a dog, which again is long and it straggles down the page. And that's when he's very, very young. So it's as if he's storing up all this stuff and then producing it as a kind of anthology.
So you think about that, that's what creativity is. It's sort of building, it's taking, it's, you know, and then it bursts into something that's fantastical, which is exactly what happened there. Now, let's talk about the man himself. He was quiet, serious, neurotic. who is an Anglican deacon, a photographer, a mathematician, an author, and an academic. And he was actually called Charles Dodgson.
Yes, and in some ways, you could think of him as two people sharing one skin. So yes, he was the Reverend Charles Dodgson, who was an upright, rather uptight academic, a mathematician, a clergyman, someone who believed in what he called an absolute distinction between right and wrong. And of course, he's also the children's author, Lewis Carroll, friend to hundreds of children. He packs his cupboards in Christchurch with toys and games and puzzles. He writes stories for his child friends. And what's interesting about the Alice books is that's really the only place where these two sides of his personality could happily cohabit, because the world of Wonderland is a place where logic slams up against nonsense. It's a place that takes rules seriously, and it also undermines them at every turn. So it's the place where these two sides of him could have a kind of a quarrel or a standoff.
Yeah. So do you think his personality was in crisis? Do you think he had a kind of a problem, you know, with two sides?
Okay, I wouldn't say it was a problem. I'd say that it was more like a double act. You know, like comedians have often, like Lauren Hardy, or kind of Morecambe and Wise. You have the straight man and the funny man. Well, Lewis Carroll, Charles Dodgson, they were the funny man and the straight man. It just happened they were in one person rather than being split across two people.
Go on, spoil yourself. Listen to Gorgeous Gossip on Radio Gorgeous. In the 20th century, we're now moral in so many different ways. It seems odd that Carol did have a fascination with Alice. Why do you think there was nothing sinister about the relationship?
Well, I think what I try and do in the book is to spell out what we know and what we don't know. And what we know is that, yes, he had a fascination with children and with childhood, with innocence. And he needed to test his innocence and prove his innocence by doing things we would now think of as very strange, like taking nude photographs of little girls. That was his way of proving he didn't have any impure thoughts. Now, these days, after Freud, of course, we're bound to think this is evidence he did have impure thoughts. And one of his letters, he said, "We are beings of very mixed motives. We are beings of very mixed motives." That's probably the fairest way of thinking about it. Beyond that, it involves psychoanalysing someone who is dead. And that is obviously dangerous and difficult, because we simply come up with the answers we want. And that's why Lewis Carroll is so interesting for us after Jimmy Savile, because he's become like a kind of lightning conductor for all our fears about children and childhood and sexuality.
I mean, the only thing that I thought was a slight giveaway in the book was that Alice's parents said at one point, "We don't really want you to hang around so much." And that really stuck out to me on the page.
Yes. And what we don't know, though, is had they misinterpreted his motives, or had they interpreted his motives all too well? Much later on, Alice's sister, who was called Lorena, wrote to her when they were both old women. And Lorena had been approached by a biographer wanting to know the truth about why the family had broken off their contact with Carol. And Lorena said, "I told her that it's because he became too affectionate towards you as you grew older." Now, what we don't know is whether that was true or whether it was something that was so ridiculous she was spinning it as a yarn to put the biographer off the scent. But even if he had become fond of Alice, we have to remember the age of consent in the 1860s was 12. It was raised to 13 in 1865. It wasn't until 1885 that it's raised to 16. So in fact, if he had wanted to probably not marry her, but maybe become engaged to her when she was still a young girl, it would have been unusual, but it wouldn't have been out of the ordinary.
Gosh, they could have been engaged at 10 or something.
Well, there were some examples, yes, of much older men engaged to much, much younger girls. And they wouldn't have married then, and they certainly wouldn't have thought of a sexual relationship as appropriate then. But it's a different way of thinking about marriage, which we find utterly bizarre and abhorrent. And it's why, again, you go back to the Alice books, and that picture that John Tenniel draws of Alice opening up that little doorway into Wonderland, that's a little bit like us now trying to imagine our way back into Victorian Oxford, you know, this tiny little entryway. We can't squeeze through it. We find it almost impossible to imagine what it must have been like to be living then.
Well, that's why your book does such a good job. And I'm just going to say one more thing, that I think the person who is Alice at the moment in the Zeitgeist is Carla Delevingne. What do you think?
I don't know much about Carla Delevingne. Tell me about Carla.
Well, she's a naughty supermodel. She breaks the rules continually, and she's very young and very fresh and naughty, I'd say. And she, you know, she has relationships with women, but she doesn't call herself a lesbian. She is very attractive. She is a model. She's also an actress. And whenever she's photographed, she's winking or she's kissing or she's naughty. She symbolises like freedom, really.
It's so interesting. She's a model. Models are used to being photographed. And of course, the original Alice Liddell, got to know Carol through his photography. Mm. And the reason he loved photographing little girls is that when you take a photograph of a little girl, she stays little. She stays little forever. And that is one of the things which we perhaps haven't quite outgrown, this desire to take young and beautiful girls or women and to fix them, to not allow them to grow up.
Exactly. The Story of Alice, Lewis Carroll and the Secret World of Wonderland is published by Hartville Secker. Thank you so much for coming on to Radio Gorgeous.
It's been a real pleasure.
One pill makes you larger, and one pill makes you small. And the ones that mother gives you don't do anything.
RadioGorgeous.com.